Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Labor Day, 2018.
It is 2018.
Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me is some strange person I've never seen before. Oh, I have seen him.
Well, just because
he's looking good, though, folks.
He is looking good. Mike Cosentino. You know, I came with a built-in nickname. That was kind of cool because then you didn't get one of those stupid nicknames. Mm-hmm. I've been in all those environments where you get nicknames.
Yeah.
Like in the service, they want to give you a nickname, and in work environments where they feel family, they give you a silly nickname. Cause was my nickname because I mispronounced my last. I had Cause.
Yeah. Cause.
I came with a built-in nickname.
I heard you refer to it as that. Your students referred to you when they weren't, maybe not to your face, but they called it Cause.
They do. No, yeah. I never. I got Mr. Cause. I got a note the other day for Mr. Cause. But they called my dad Cozy in World War II.
Huh.
Yeah, and you know what? I prefer Cause to Cozy.
Yeah, I think so.
So now I know why I mispronounces my last. Cozy,
yeah.
Cozy,
yeah.
Cozy.
I think you should keep mispronouncing it myself.
Okay, I will go with that.
But
who's on this side of the microphone. We're going to talk about Labor Day for a minute, and then we're going to talk about local elections, I think, coming up.
What is this? You know, when I worked as Jeep driver, they called me not Steve or Steven, they called me Steve-O.
Steve-O.
Steve-O. Where does that come from?
That came from the guy that was on the Tonight Show, Steve.
All right, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He called himself Steve-O, that comedian in the 50s.
Well, that's
and
what 60s. They called me. That was my nickname.
We're
going to talk about labor history, Mike, and I know know a lot about
a
it
bit.
And could go on for maybe two or three weeks, but I think it's important, folks, to recap a little bit of labor history. We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to talk about the election results and the election process.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Both state-wise, and it's really interesting stuff has happened, and also locally.
So we're going to talk about numbers. Steve's got the numbers. Well, I'm not going to be on that long because I want to talk about Labor Day, but I'm going to wax philosophical here. We're talking about violence when we talk about United States and labor. The other side doesn't give up anything easily. We're talking about a decades-long fight for an eight-hour day, a decades-long fight to get children out of horrible working conditions in factories. We're talking about a decades-long fight for a living wage. And by fight, I mean bloody fights. The Haymarket Square, the Pullman strike, all of these milestones in labor history were bloody messes. Labor unions started right after the Civil War. You know, all these men, mostly, started to go to work, and the first thing they noticed is that the wealth was concentrated in very few hands, and they were working for lousy wages.
Lousy is hardly half. They were working for unbearably bad wages, or they wouldn't have taken on the whole system back there, Mike. I think it had to be extremely bad or they wouldn't have done it. Part of it, though, I would give credit not only to the labor movement, but to artists and photographers and stuff. For example, the Times has an article. They're photographing what child labor looked like. And these publications of what child labor looked like of these, you know, eight-year-old miners.
Very true.
And stuff help break some of that stuff. But I think you're absolutely right. It was a horrible right to get a 40-hour week was a huge fight.
That's it. Long
an 8-hour day was a huge fight. These were considered terribly, terribly radical.
And you see these signs, these memes all the time on the internet about if you enjoy your 8-hour day, thank a union member. If you enjoy your 40-hour week, if you enjoy Labor Day off, thank a union.
I think the point to make, Mike, is that when labor got a 40-hour week enshrined in the U.S., they helped everybody, whether you were in a union or not. When they got an 8-hour day, they helped everybody, whether you were in a union or not. And I think they don't get any credit for this. The same thing with the five-day work week. I mean, they created this through protest. And now everyone benefits from it, even the people who hate unions.
That was the National Labor Union, the first one formed in 1866, like I said, right after the Civil War. Civil War ended in 1865. And the NLU formed, and what they did is they combined skilled workers and unskilled labor. That's what made it, like,
That was a major change.
Right.
Because skilled workers had been in unions for a long time.
That's
so
right.
If you wanted to get skilled carpentry done, I mean, you were working with the union labor.
That's right.
But they were very restrictive. They didn't let people in. They certainly didn't let anybody in who didn't have skills. You had to be an apprentice. You had to have skills.
Right.
They had to sign off on your stonemasonry before you could go and get the job.
So the NLU forms in 1866, and immediately, and mostly over that eight-hour workday thing, they fail to do that, but they do get an eight-hour workday for government employees only. And then, of course, the government did, including what business did, anytime there was a reduction in wages, a reduction in hours, they lowered wages. So they effectively causing the reduction of hours to be moot. This happens time and time again, and it happens in 2018. We just had the pizza place. I won't give them any free advertising by mentioning their name. That's the first thing they did. They cut benefits as soon as they cut insurance, as soon as they were forced to pay something for insurance.
And then they've gotten a tax cut that we had an oligarchical situation to start with, Mike. And then we had this tax cut. It just poured money in. I've been reading these articles call them conservatives, reactionaries, whatever you want to call them. They've been pouring more and more money. I mean, it just filled the pockets of the very wealthy. They have so much money now. They're even though Trump is declining in popularity, they're spending billions of dollars, I guess, to elect people who will support the man.
I just don't get it. Except I do get it. Any brief study of labor movement just shows you how long we've been a fascist country. This unholy marriage of business and government and the military, to a degree, not like Italy or Germany, I'm going to add the word yet, not like those fascist countries, but this unholy marriage of labor and government has been around a long time and has caused the violence.
When I worked in a luxury hotel as a bartender in New York, they were working us incredible hours and not paying us for any overtime. They owed me thousands of dollars if I had calculated out my money. And we got so desperate. The union wasn't coming in because they had signed a sort of sweetheart contract not to enter a new hotel until they'd been there 6 months so that the hotel can fire the guys who are no good. I have no problem with the hotel getting rid of the bad seed because you're going to hire a bunch of guys. But it went on and on and on. And so one of the guys and I called the union and said, look, you don't come into our hotel and organize it. We're going to call this very vicious, well, not vicious, but this very tough union from New Haven. And Mike will have heard about their strikes and stuff. And the union showed up. They got me some of my back pay they got me about half the back pay that the thing owed us, about half the back pay that Dan was owed. And no more unpaid overtime.
Well, that's
We worked. We got paid for every hour, and that was really the union's doing. And frankly, it was not a great union. It was in federal receivership, and there were guys in the that you wouldn't want to meet in dark alley. But the change was really striking, Mike, and it was because a union came in to this very large, very rich corporation.
Well, that's it. You've heard me say for 7 years, if you listen to all our Labor Day shows, I say this. There is nothing more American than a union. There is nothing more American than you. There's when somebody stands up when somebody advocates for the little guy, when somebody stands up for the worker, that's an American thing. We think of that as American.
But the ideology now is you have to do everything on your own. You have to negotiate with management on your own. You have to, and you can do a little bit of that. And if you're in a really good place, you can leverage it into a lot of money.
It means a lot more if you have advocacy.
But ordinary people in ordinary situations without standing together cannot get wages raised.
Absolutely.
And I think what we're seeing, I'll tell you what I think, Mike, and I don't have a lot of theoretical information on this. The reason we have this huge tax cut to the wealthy and corporations particularly,
insane,
and we don't see a big jump in wages is because there's no unions there to say, aha, they've got a bunch more money, let's get our share.
That's right.
Why it's not happening,
That's
I think.
That's exactly 100% correct. Steve Williamson gets the gold star today. That's exactly what's going on. NPR said, as I was driving in, you know, 10 years of growth, of economic recovery, 10 years of recovery, people making money everywhere. The Dow Jones is so heated up, it's exploding. Wages,
unemployment going down, 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 and that always raises wages because people have to compete. Raises wages, Mike.
I like it.
Raises wages, not wages, but raises wages. And it's not doing it this time.
That's right.
It's a tiny bit here and there, but not what should be happening based on the old economic model.
And inflation is eating it up. Inflation is eating up any gains that any wages have
these silly trade wars. And, I mean, the thing is, you're going to get $1,100 less taxes if you're middle class, and you're going to end up paying, you know, $1,500 worth of increased prices from the, both from if you try to borrow money, but also for imported goods.
It's so sad that we have to go through this again and again and again. Demagogues like Trump have been around a long time. We used to see them coming down the road, and now we don't anymore. Whether we've dumbed down as a population, whether the right has been so successful through their media outlets, and the loss of unions.
I really think the difference, Mike, I mean, I don't know, you can tell me what you think on this, but
sure.
I really think it's a lot, you know, the Fox News, the media
Absolutely.
Networks, and this network of stuff, and they really train people to think about stuff differently. And we've all seen Mike and I have seen the statistic that the more you watch Fox News, the more when they question you about facts, you're in factual error. The more you listen to it, the less you end up knowing. But it's a giant machine for the far right. And we also have these vast contribution systems. So when we talk about the Koch brothers, it sounds more personal than it is. It started within, but it is now a series of interlocking networks that bring in vast amounts of very, very far right-wing and libertarian money and push them into all kinds of issues.
And it's not just a point of view. It's one thing about a point of view, but it's another thing when that point of view denies insurance to children and old people. It's another thing when that point of view denies raises for millions of Americans. It's another thing when that point of view denies all so a woman to a you know that Susie doesn't have to die because she doesn't want a baby. That's not a point of view. That's a whole different thing.
Should we talk for a minute about the local election?
Let's
Mike?
Do and then, that before.
And these are statistics that I got, folks, from, and I give
him very
credit for it, from Robert Robb, who is an extremely conservative columnist for the AZ Republic. And what his column is about is how difficult it's going to be for Democrats to change things. And I understand that he's coming from a conservative point of view. 40% of the people voting in the election are Republicans. Right.
Yeah.
The Democrats have added 21,000 new Democrats since like 2014.
A measly 21,000.
And Republicans added even more measly 5,000. But Democrats have to think about the Republican dominance. The difference between the number of Republicans and Democrats has gone down from an astonishing 178,000 to 153,000. That means that if you're a Democrat and Republicans stick 90% to their party, you have to win the vast majority of independent voters.
That's right.
That's the problem that Democrats face. The number of independents has actually been going down. In 2014, there were 43,000 more independents than Republicans. You know, it goes independent, Republican, Democrat.
In Arizona.
Now there are 45 in Arizona, yeah. And now there are 45,000 more Republicans than independents. So there's a lot of shift in the population that's, you know, I mean, I know Democrats don't like to hear this stuff, but the voting percentage this last election, I've heard different figures, but it's still very low.
There's two,
despite all the interest, Mike.
There's two Facebook pages called Arizona Politics, and I post on both of them. And when I talk about the blue wave, on one of them particularly, I get, laughed at. I was trying to find a better way to say it.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, something like that. The conservatives come on from around the state and say, there is no blue wave, not in this state. There's not going to be a blue wave in this state. And you and I both know local Democrats that believe that this is it. This is our time. This is happening. Trump
I
has finally pushed everybody over the edge. But your numbers, or at least Rob's numbers,
yeah,
don't bear that out. And so Rob in a way, is doing liberals in Arizona
a favor by telling you what you're really actually facing.
This is what you're facing,
this
guys.
This is what you're facing.
They're still not registered. You know, all those people that you thought you registered, yeah, fine, 21,000, they're still not voting.
And not in the numbers. The electorate is still older and whiter and more
apparently
conservative and more Republican than the population,
right,
by a long shot. So I don't know. I have any solution to this, Mike, but in fact our politics is determined by a very small number of the actual potential voters.
Well, so we do have the solution.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, the Arizona Democratic Party has a solution. The DNC has a solution, and that is voter turnout. When Democrats vote, Democrats win. The problem is, as that wise old sage Republican Jan Brewer, that's a joke, said, they don't vote. She's not worried about the Hispanic vote in Arizona because they, you hear it? If I could say it loud enough to have everybody, they don't vote. They don't vote.
That is the key issue, and what astonished me with all the complexity and all the interest in this race, it was a lot more voters than 2016. But it wasn't, you know, like 80% of the people didn't vote. You know, I mean, it was, I believe in 40%, some places 21% of the registered voters voted. People are still not engaged, Mike. I know a lot of Democrats are. Here in Sedona, we had a sweep. All the candidates, including my wonderful wife, won in for city council places.
Yes.
The mayor won. The Tea Party, who says they're not the Tea Party, candidates
right,
lost.
Right.
But it is astonishing to see such terrible candidates on their part get even the amount of votes that they got.
The Sedona government haters lost.
That's a good point. Home rule passed 2-1.
Yep. Yeah, 66%. Very,
but,
very good. Very strong.
But when the Tea Party,
Sedona couldn't be fooled. I'm very proud of Sedona for that.
It took incredible effort, Mike, and cost a lot of money.
And let's give Steve Sagner a shout out.
Yeah.
Who else deserves as much on home rule as Steve does?
It took everybody. It took the businesses. See, home rule, voting against home rule is an attack on the entire business structure of Sedona.
Exactly.
So as I mentioned before, it threw kind of people like me who have no investment particularly in business anymore. I'm not in the tourism industry where we're really dependent on how many people come here. And also getting the kind of people who stop in Sedona, who not drive up the canyon, but stop in Sedona to do something. And also, to be honest with you, people who can afford to go for a Jeep tour or have dinner or whatever it is. So this is a big victory in Sedona. In Sedona, the blue wave worked.
Yes.
I mean, because one of the races for 4 years, all three of our candidates got in. And it's very easy for somebody not get 50% based on this complicated calculation, and so there'd be a runoff. So thank God. I mean, we don't have two more months of runoffs. We have an excellent council. We have the two Democrats we supported, and we have the most talented, I think, independent also won.
I do hate to bring this up, but I'm going to. The town might revisit permanent base adjustment, but this time in an intelligent way. if you want to have some sort of permanent base adjustment, you can study it and come up with a number that you can run your city on.
The Tea Party that says it's not the Tea Party has a permanent base adjustment on the ballot in November. Why? I don't understand why 35 people who don't live in Sedona have been put back on the petition, and now we have to vote on this. But, you know, I'm not a lawyer.
I didn't know. Sorry. I thought it was still. Go ahead.
So they put it on the ballot, but it's a Tea Party calculation. So it's, you know, how to lie with statistics. I mean, if you want to do statistics, you really have to be honest, you know.
You do.
You know, you're going to live outside the law, you know, as Dylan said. But if you're going to do statistics, you have to be honest. Yeah. Unless you don't want to be honest because you want to. So the PBA on the ballot in November is $10 million less than the city currently raises and spends. So PBA is not a bad idea if you have the right figure, as Mike was
saying.
That's
right.
But this figure in the fall is something to vote again. The other thing, Mike, is that, you know, we interviewed Terry Goddard on the dirty money ballot. Mm-hmm. All those hundreds of thousands of people that signed it. They changed the state law to make collecting petitions by human beings very difficult. They eliminated whole batches. I mean, he had tens of thousands of more signatures needed, and they eliminated it and threw it off the ballot on technicalities, the state Supreme Court. A part of it is the state Supreme Court is not good, but part of it is they're following bad law that's been put in by people who don't want the petition to work. The other petition that would have brought a lot of money for teachers and schools was also thrown off the ballot. Complicated things about whether they define things correctly or whether they used a percentage rather than another figure.
And the word percent.
Yeah.
I believe was the problem.
And so there were they threw off ballots that hundreds of thousands of people signed.
Yeah.
So those petitions are off. We'll talk about the propositions and stuff that are on a closer date because, you know, who can remember this stuff? But when we get closer to election, we'll talk about the propositions. It's basically vote no on these things. They're awful. But we'll talk about it then. The other thing that people are considering, I don't know what Mike thinks about this, is a no vote on the judges.
Yeah.
Vote no on all the judges.
Absolutely.
And you think that's a good idea? It's just a protest vote. It won't have any effect on them getting elected.
Right.
But just to send a message that, hey, you're messing with us and we don't like it. So vote no on all the judges because they're all appointed by the governor.
Yes. And we'll talk about the two names of the Arizona Supreme Court justices, especially that we don't vote no. And I believe that's worded on the ballot is should so and so be retained in office. And then you want to vote no.
It's this kind of odd language, isn't it?
Right? It is a sort of odd language.
You're voting to retain or not retain a person.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's another subject.
So we had some interesting races. We had in the primary, McSally won. She beat out Kelly
Ward and Joe Arpaio.
Yeah, and Joe Arpaio.
They each got 20% of the vote.
I know. They almost.
78,000 people voted for Joe Arpaio.
Yeah. He won over in the Yuma area. He won that whole county over there. That's the only place he won. McSally won everywhere else. Kelly Ward was a tone deaf. Gosh, she's just so awful. It's hard to believe. I mean, the kind of things she said about McCain when he was dying, that his dying was the announcement that they are taking him off his meds was ruining her campaign announcement. Something like this. Anyway, I'm glad that's gone. Sally's their best candidate. And then on the Democratic side, it was Kirsten Sinema versus,
Deidre Abood.
And Deidre was a hard-driving, super progressive woman. Yeah. Muslim or not, she's free speech and
healthcare.
Separation of church and state and healthcare all the way. She got 20% of the vote.
Yeah.
Kirsten Sinema's most talented Democratic politicians we've ever had in Arizona, and she got the other 80%.
Yeah.
So it's now going to be Kirsten Sinema and
Martha McSally.
Martha McSally running. I saw Martha McSally's ads, and it's great to serve the country, but I'm not sure what being a fighter pilot exactly you know, prepares you to be a senator. It's a very different, it's a different set of skills. But in her, she has pictures of her as a fighter pilot, and she has a picture of Kyrsten Sinema in a very unfortunate pink dress.
Yeah.
While I was fighting in Iraq, Kyrsten Sinema was radical showing up in a pink tutu. What do you think, Mike? How's this thing going to go?
I remember that protest. I was there. I was down in Phoenix that day, and there was a women's organization that was handing out pink to a lot of people.
Oh, so she pulled up something pink.
So then, she was wearing it to show solidarity with this women's organization.
It doesn't look like the kind of thing I've ever seen her wear.
As I did, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
We put John McCain, a guy that was dressed like John McCain, in bed with the oil companies, and we pushed it down the street as a protest regarding the Iraq war. I'm afraid
we've had a comment that from someone in the studio that said they wanted to know that we know you have confessed to wearing pink at this meeting, but were you wearing a tutu? That is a question.
I was not wearing
in.
A tutu. I believe it was a nightie. It was something that the women had given me, and they just had a great time dressing me in it, and it was. And we, like I said, we went down Heritage Park, Phoenix Heritage Square, and did all of this.
So that's what this is for. So what is Kyrsten saying about McSally? Except that she giving up to Trump.
Two excellent ads, both about health care, from Sinema's answer to McSally, at least for now. And this is going to be a wild race.
That's about positions, Mike, not just sort of personal attacks.
That's right, and that's right. So she has a woman come on talking about pre-existing conditions. Martha McSally she's supporting the Republican position that denies insurance for pre-existing conditions. That's one of Sinema's ads.
People will die.
And another one is just health care in general, and that's right, and that's what Sinema kind of says in the other ad, is that there is nothing more important than taking care of each other, taking care of our families through health care.
Another interesting race is for governor, right?
Oh, fascinating. David
Governor Ducey won re-election, no surprise there. Ken Bennett is a real...
Oh, boy.
You know, Prescott a guy. Real... birther guy, a birther racist. So I'm glad Ducey beat him. And then on the other side, David Garcia won. And I supported Steve Farley. I got to say that. David Garcia is a brilliant, talented guy. It should be a very interesting race, Mike.
I think the state is going to learn a whole lot that they like about David Garcia in the next 65 days or however many days until the election. He won for a good reason. He is a great candidate. He has a great story, and he will make a very, very good, and I guess more important than any of that, he'll make a very good governor, and that's why people voted
and
for him.
And Michelle Reagan, one of the most incompetent people to ever manage elections in the whole history of the universe, lost in the Republican primary. They took her out.
A sitting incumbent lost her primary. That happens very rarely.
And I think even more in the Republican
A gentleman named Gaynor, even more on the Republican side, will be facing Katie Hobbs, the articulate, the bubbly, the...
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
She is a very, very smart person.
Katie Hobbs, as far as I'm concerned, is running for Secretary of State against a man named, last name is Gaynor, I forgot his first name.
He's a really far right-wing guy, right? I've seen his stuff is really pretty... I don't know. Michelle Reagan kind of kept some of that stuff out of the race. She just couldn't do her job.
I want to jump back to the Sinema McSally race. I believe McSally ran far to the right.
She did.
In the primer. I believe she's going to have to move that in. She's going to have to reel that in because you can't get elected with just Republicans.
She's kissing the big orange ones derriere through most of the race. Put it more seriously, folks, she began to campaign as a big friend, candidate, and supporter of Donald Trump.
That's right.
And she hadn't done that earlier when she was running for Congress. Our local congresswoman, Ann Kirkpatrick, moved down to Tucson, and she's won the Democratic nomination for McSally's seat.
Old district.
And it carries a piece of Tucson and then goes over to the east. It's a very much a... contested district. So we'll see what happens. It's very hard for a Democrat to win there. Democrats have won there, but they've also lost there.
I was going to say, I don't think this came along for McSally, by the way, the senatorship, Flake leaving office, our current senator leaving office, was a godsend to her because she wouldn't have won her next race.
No.
She barely won the last one.
Yeah, I mean, yes. So it's been what other contest should we talk about, Mike? Tom O'Halloran ran unopposed and won here. He's our congressman.
He's running against Wendy Rogers.
He's running against Wendy Rogers, which is the strongest other Republican, candidate. Yeah. It's the one we would have picked. Yeah. Steve Smith was God, country, family guy. I don't know where he came from. It was a very nasty contest, Mike, on the Republican side with them calling each other names and trying to prove who was the most extreme and right wing.
You know, I'm not going to mention names, but I am going to just tell our audience that, watch Cottonwood. It's going to be interesting. None of my candidates won, by the way.
I wanted to ask you how the race went down there.
It's a conservative council, at least conservative members that will be joining the current council. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens I think we'll talk about it next week if you like, on an individual basis.
All right. Next week, what we actually have next week, I think it should be an interesting show, is we have three local Democratic activists and organizers. And we're going to talk about something that you don't hear much about, which is Kathy Rutherford, Kathy Kinsella, and John Hirsch, which is how you organize, what you have to do to win elections, how you go and talk to people, what canvassing is. We'll have a show about the nitty-gritty of organizing in politics by three people who are very good at it, representing Democrats of the Red Rock, representing PCs, precinct committee people. I think it'll be a really interesting show. It'll be something a little bit different than you hear.
Yeah, it'll be
places.
Kind of an insider show. So yeah. Kathy Rutherford, Kathy Kinsella, and Karen.
And John.
Good old John. From Dora, from Democrats.
From Dora. Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed it. Missed his last name.
That's fine.
Mike will look it up.
Well, before the end.
His fingers work faster than I do on the cell phone.
So it
was an interesting, overall, folks, interesting race. Get prepared for an interesting battle in the fall. I mean, we have a lot of chances. So David Garcia, in 2014, when almost all our brilliant and well-prepared and candidates got beaten in the state, David Garcia came the closest to winning. He actually won Maricopa County, which I don't think a Democrat's done in a long time. He was defeated by some rural vote, but it was pretty close. And now he's running for governor.
Let's talk about Corporation Commission.
Ah, Corporation Commission.
Kiana Sears.
Yes.
And Sandra Kennedy.
Yes.
At least for the moment. Now, I did get an email from Bill Mundell last night that said he's 1.1% out of the running, but there's still votes to count.
Who is he close to? Not Sandra, but to Kiana.
Kiana,
right?
Sears, yeah.
Kiana.
Yeah.
They're both great. They're both intelligent. I mean, Kiana's worked for the Corporation Commission in the area of water conservation and transportation and stuff.
Yes.
So she's really knowledgeable about that. And then Sandra's been on the commission before. So
yeah,
you have two really well-prepared candidates.
Exactly. It's a great marriage of experience and new, bringing new blood, new fire. I have to admit, I didn't think Kiana would make it. She's a wonderful candidate. She spoke well. But Bill Mundell was the old political guy.
Yeah, and what do you think it's the year of the women?
Yes.
You think that's why?
Oh, without a doubt.
That's why Bill, because he was.
Well, same thing with Superintendent.
Because his background was perfect to be on the Corporation Commission.
Exactly.
He had absolutely the best background of any candidates, Republicans or Democrats, and he came up just short.
Well, look at and I think this is probably the wisest thing we've said on the show this morning. David Shapira, the candidate for Superintendent of Public Instruction, was beaten by Kathy Hoffman. their policies were the same. The only difference, one was a man, one was a woman. I don't see, she won by 52.
That was an upset.
I believe a major 52%. Upset. Now, Hoffman will be wonderful, I think.
We've interviewed her, and I think she's great. She's another really, you know, she's another really intelligent, focused person.
But going back to what you said, precious little difference between the candidates.
No, no.
And the woman won by 2 percentage points.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
and I think in
John Hake, by the way,
I love what
you called this, by the way. You called it the Nitty Gritty Politics Show. So that's what we're calling next week, September 10th, is the Nitty Gritty.
I think you'll find it interesting.
Politics Show.
Yeah, John Hake. I'm sorry, John. I'm an old guy. I get these mental.
Yes, right. I always say that age-related memory loss is a real thing.
Yeah.
In case you ever wondered.
And in fact, in Sedona. Janice Howell got more votes we're talking about the 4-year term with all these candidates running for the 4-year term, and 3 of them go through and the others don't. She was an unknown. She was new. She's a woman, and she got more votes than Scott did. Scott Diablo, who is one of the most widely known candidates in Sedona and, the kind of candidate that reaches out to all different political parties and has, you know, conservative and, Republican friends as well as everything. She actually got more votes than he did.
I was in a bar the other day. Somebody knew Scott Jablow's name, first of all, and almost pronounced it correctly. I was fascinated to. So, yeah, he's been around a while.
And he's been on the PNG, you know, and then he's been on the city council for 4 years. He's done a really good job. And an unknown woman got a few more votes than he did.
Well, that's
He won, but it was, we thought it would go the other way. We thought he'd get the most votes,
sure,
and she'd get the second most votes, and Bill Chisholm would get the third most, and it flipped. And either it's anti-incumbentness is still out there, or it's the year of the woman.
No, I think it's the year of the woman. I think, you know, the blue wave we thought was coming is going to come in the form. Any of it that comes at this point, unless something happens in the next 65 days for lots of things, I think it's going to come in the form of women turning out. They're reliable. They will turn out. They will vote. And I think this, we saw that in the, in some of the local elections and some of the statewide elections.
Let me ask you this, Mike, get your wisdom on it.
Sure.
As a person who's been an activist for a long time, we'll be talking to activists next week. How do you keep going amidst all the losses and the unpleasantness of the campaign? None of us liked this nastiness. I mean, to be honest, we came back from sort of a roots trip to Ireland, and it was like going from this peaceful green place to this hothouse of extreme political mess. And the first thing, your first reaction is, I want out of here. That was my reaction.
It's a good question,
Steve. I'm not running for
it. It's a good question, Steve. I get asked it all the time. I have people, my partner certainly asked me, how do you bear, I mean, it's been so long, I have gay friends that ask me, especially, you know, that they're always on the front line. I have people of color that ask me. I was in a bar, amazingly enough, again.
In a bar where you
My
might.
Friends of, my,
not in a coffee
a
shop.
Close friend of color, came up and just thanked me, actually, for my, activism. But they also ask, how do you do it? And part of it is compartmentalizing. I don't know, hope is the word. I have to have, it's like, I think any minute Donald Trump can throw me in a concentration camp because of who I am. I will not like that. I'm not looking forward to that. And I know that seems extreme, but after these midterm elections, folks, I don't think it is so extreme. I think they'll go through my Facebook page and yes, people like me will be in trouble.
I'm the last guy to sort of yell wolf, but Donald Trump is a real danger to the United States, to our government, to our standing in the world, and to our people. He's a real danger.
So I don't know. I think you just can't. I don't know.
Mike. How do you bear this? You know, I mean, it's moving to from here from sort of from New York and from Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
From New York. I see all these great Democratic candidates year after year.
Yeah.
We interview them. We talk to them. They're all smart. They're well prepared. Yeah. They're honest.
And they
what
lose.
What happens to them, Mike? Year after year, all those wonderful candidates in 2014, you could hardly come up with better candidates, and they all lost. How do you keep going?
Well, let's take, I've seen this, Howard Shanker, Diderot Boud, nobody worked harder. I've never seen, and I've seen lots of candidates in the last 20 years, nobody worked harder. They did everything right. And they got less than 20% of the vote. That's devastating. That's the hard part, is they worked so hard and got so little. That's the part that I can't explain to them. I can explain, this is where you live. Look around you. Go to the bar. I was in line at the casino the other night with a guy telling me what an American he is, and so he doesn't want to eat Italian dressing. I mean, that's somehow eating Italian dressing.
What?
Well, blue cheese.
What?
The conversation started about blue cheese being for...
You're hanging out with the wrong people. I mean, if he doesn't eat Italian dressing, the man is insane.
Blue cheese dressing was for fey Europeans. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. No, so he had to have...
What about French dressing? He didn't drink that? He
forget
doesn't eat
French
that
dressing. Ranch dressing. Get it? Ranch dressing was the only dress. The point is, we had this conversation. This is where we live. So I
actually believe you.
I had a great time with the young man. Had to stand a little uphill, upwind, because he was,
I understand.
But the idea was that this is where we live. And so, Diderot Boud, great race, great fight, but this is where we live.
Yeah, very funny lady.
Kat Ginzel worked so hard. Talk about activists. Talk about, somebody that comes from.
What did she run for, Mike?
She was a helper for Kelly Fryer and Diderot Boud. She was a local activist, lives over in Lake Montezuma, and worked. She walked down the streets of Flagstaff for these candidates, talking to every stranger she could find. That's an activist. Guys like me that sit at home and post on Facebook. Yeah, okay, fine. And I do a radio show.
So we have some good shows coming up.
We have some good shows.
We're going to have, my brain's going. McLean's going to be coming back.
Nancy McLean.
Democracy coming back
and Change.
I think it's October.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book. If you want to know why we're at, where our politicians don't represent the public, Nancy McLean's book is great.
Our last interview, somebody said, I really liked your interview with Nancy McLean.
Well, she was right. No matter how screwed up we were, she was right on.
But she said it was too scary. I couldn't finish listening to it. So that's kind of, I don't know. If you make politics nasty enough, most people stay out of it. People just don't like all this. And yet,
that's true.
To get to a better America, you have to go through it. It's like it's like a series of hoops. You have to get out and vote and get involved, or we're not going to end up with a better America. Somebody like Trump take us down.
I want to go with what Jeff Bigger says. Hope, hopelessness adapts. Hope doesn't give up. That's how I stay active. Hopelessness adapts. Hope keeps fighting. So I'm more of the hope guy than the hopeless guy. Now, I can maybe come back from Sicily or come back from Ireland and be sad for a couple of days. But hope fills back up, and then I get back out there, and I'm doing the same thing.
This is not a political thing. This was an actual feeling coming from all this peacefulness and singing happiness and coming back to this.
I get it all the time.
Folks,
we've only got a minute or two left. We want to remind everyone, September 10th is our next show. We want to remind everyone that our shows we got podcasts, we got live. You can hear Democratic Perspective all over the world. Simply tune in to 780, find the website, go to TuneIn. You can listen. You don't have a radio, that's fine. All you need is a computer. All you need is a cell phone. You can listen to us live. You can listen to our podcast, vvid.org. Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org has all our great shows.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.